And get you more full screen here. There we go. There we go.
Sounds good.
Set up better. Is that awesome. A flag you have in the background? Or
what it is
that?
Yep. We got the American flag hanging up in the background here.
Excellent.
Our one room decoration, pretty much. So, yeah. My room. Yeah. So I live in Heritage with Evan Rangel, who is the manager for the risk and ops department.
Okay.
So he's also on the fund. So he and I are roommates. So
that's Heritage is the one that's right across the street, right?
Yes. Yes. The big one.
You have to be a senior to live in.
Junior or senior typically. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. That's good. And then you're not, is it Arden Village? It's locked down.
Yeah. They're like super locked down. I think they're completely on quarantine right now. The whole Arden Village is. Yeah. Heritage has been all right. Actually, we have not seen too many cases come out of here, which is pretty good.
Yeah,
that's as of right now, though.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Did you see the news this morning on Pfizer's vaccine?
I did. That was huge.
Yeah, it's really rocking the market here.
Yeah, it is. Yes, it is.
But I was actually surprised. I mean, there's like 180 companies that are working on vaccines,
right?
But kind of the experts thought that first one out of the gate probably wouldn't be more than about 50 or 60% effective, and then
right,
it's over 90% yes, effective.
Which is insane.
I hope that's true.
So, I would agree with you.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, we can get things kicked off here. So to kind of give you the rundown, I will turn my camera off just because I've noticed when I leave it on every now and then, I'll get a little bit of super lagginess. So I'd love to keep it on and converse like this. Feels more personal, but I will keep it off just so we don't glitch out. And really all that I'm going to do is I'm just going to be asking you the questions that I prepared. Yeah. So you did get to see those, correct?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did. Perfect. See them. Okay. I looked at them prepared a little bit.
Wonderful.
So how long do you want the whole podcast to be? I guess that was the one question I wasn't.
Yes. So anywhere between, I'd probably try to keep it between 15 and 25 minutes. So, I can trim a little bit, but if we're maybe going through
closer to 15 than
closer to 15. Maybe. Yeah. Cause we've been running a little bit long. So I've tried to
limit
my amount of questions. Probably closer to 15 to 20 minutes. So if we're going through, six questions, maybe 3 minutes a question, something right around there.
So, yeah. And if you want to keep the camera on, I mean, I find it easier to engage if I can
see you
too. So that's fine with me.
Okay.
One thing I'll say is that you're doing a great job on, these LinkedIn pieces. So
thank you.
Because that's what I was kind of hoping that we would do is sort of flood the zone a little bit on our LinkedIn exposure. And I noticed that we're gradually getting an increase in followers.
Yes, we are.
That's good.
Awesome. Thank you. Yeah, I'm recording a video of Evan today, actually right after this for his introduction. And then I'll probably jump in and do mine as well. Still trying to figure out how we're going to do Baylor's since he's down in Panama, but it might just have to be a little interview like this. So we'll see.
I didn't realize this was down there.
Since you said it'll help you, I'll just leave my camera on. I totally get that.
Better.
If I glitch out at all, I'll let you know and I'll just say, hey, let's backtrack real quick redo that. So
no problem. And you're hearing my audio just fine.
I'm hearing you just fine. Yes.
Okay. One thing that I notice sometimes is, and then we can get going, is that if I have emails come in while I've got my volume on, sometimes I hear background, bell go off kind of thing. I don't know.
That's all right.
Easy way for me to stop that. I don't know.
I'm trying to think. I think you'd probably have to mute notifications, but if we get a ding in here or there, I don't think it's unless it's like repetitive, I don't think it's like the biggest deal. So and people know that we're not able to be in the studio right now, which is a bummer, but I think people understand it and just any content that we're able to produce is good enough for right now.
Sounds good.
Awesome. Okay. All right. So in that case, then I will just kind of give a quick welcome and then we'll just jump right into the questions. Sound good?
Yep. Sounds good.
All righty. Well, Dean, thank you very much for joining me on the show today. I really appreciate you being here.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks, Tony.
So Can you tell me a little bit about your life story and your career path as well?
Sure. You want me to start when I was a small child?
Wherever you want to start.
Okay, well, maybe I won't give you all the detail because some people have accused me of oversharing sometimes. So we'll, how about this? We'll start with really what I consider to be like three distinct chapters of my life and career story, and maybe a prologue to get started as an introduction. And so if I were just to start with the prologue first, really my passion and interests at a pretty early age were around knowing the price of everything and the value of different things. So I grew up on a dairy farm in Western Wisconsin, and my parents were extremely good at keeping me involved in all the financial aspects of the business. And I would go to the bank when they went to the bank to talk about their loans, and I would get involved in, you know, knowing what the price of fertilizer is and what the price of fuel is and, you know, how much it costs to produce a bushel of corn and how much it costs to produce 100 pounds of milk and what the price of milk was when at any point in time. And so I was very interested in that part of the world very early on. Not as much interested in milking cows maybe for a career, but I was very interested in the business that they were running, which was truly a business. So I think what, you know, what that did is that set me up to go to college, major in economics, with a focus on agriculture, but I didn't have a very broad worldview of knowing where exactly that would lead as far as an actual career. I actually did go to grad school right after that in agricultural economics, which is basically math. and basically more of a quantitative approach. And what that did is that combined with my farm background led me into a job at the Federal Farm Credit System doing research. And I enjoyed that very much. But that kind of was the beginning of my first chapter. That was not what I ultimately was going to do with my career, but that was sort of my starting point. And that's my advice to students is don't worry too much about that first job out of school, because that probably isn't going to be exactly, you know, the career that you end up embarking on, but it can also be a very good opportunity to learn. But my first chapter, I'd say, is really starting the career and kind of how I approach my job. And so I was sort of fascinated with the idea that people only work 40 hours a week with growing up on a farm. Was like, wow, we worked like 7 days a week. It's like, what's this 40 hours? What do people do with the other, you know, 168 hours a week or whatever's in a week? And so I got in very early in the morning. I've always been a morning person. And instead of maybe an accounting concept like LIFO, you know, last in, first out, or FIFO, first in, first out, I sort of had a belief, which is not what I'm recommending everybody do, but I had a belief that my approach was FILO, which I was first in, last out, when I first started my career. And that kind of set up my reputation or my brand, if you will, early on. And as I realized that, oh, you know, I don't have to come in at 5 o'clock in the morning or 6 o'clock in the morning and stay till 7 o'clock at night, that's probably not good for the balance in my life. But it did sort of establish my reputation as being having a strong work ethic. The other thing that I did after I realized I didn't need to always be the first one and the last one out is also just having what I would call a curiosity around business. Whatever that business is, whatever that role is that I'm playing in that business, having a curiosity about it, which was a motivator to me to keep learning. And so, you know, once, I'm sure people have said, once you get out of college, your learning is really just beginning. and if you approach it that way, I think you'll do very well in whatever your career is. And so I would volunteer to take on new projects that people did not know what the end point was going to be, to take on extra work, just to keep learning new things. And as a result of that, I got tapped periodically on the shoulder to take new responsibilities, not even positions that I interviewed for or applied for, but just somebody tapped me on the shoulder and say, you know, Dean, I think you should do this job. And so that was kind of, I'd say the first chapter, and that led into a real interest in investments. I was actually one of those things I was tapped on the shoulder on in my first job was to manage a short-term investment portfolio. I had no experience doing that. I had no credentials for it, but I was curious and I was curious and I had the opportunity because of that and some of the projects that I had done work on around that to have that opportunity. And I found that that was really interesting for me. So then that set me up to figure out what my next role was going to be in the investment world. So again, I had that same approach of just kind of curiosity, wanting to learn, having a strong work ethic, kind of a belief that anything was possible instead of focusing all the things that are not possible. And that really, again, set me up for a nice career track. In fact, I actually, Evan, don't recall actually applying for any of the jobs that I got promoted into. I was tapped on the shoulder. In fact, when I was offered the chief investment officer job, I initially turned it down because I felt like it was going to be difficult to have balance in life. And I was already in a big enough leadership role that was becoming a challenge, and the amount of travel that was required and so on was becoming a challenge. And the person that became my boss ultimately in that role was a very good salesperson. So he sold me on, I will help you find balance in your life. And I want you to have balance in your life because I want you to stay in the position for a long time. And so that was really good, and a really good boss to have as well. So that's really kind of what I call my first chapter. I don't know if you have any follow-ups or want me to go keep moving on.
Yeah, no, you can. So yeah, we'll just take a brief pause here. Okay. So you started, that was the career path, and then kind of moving on, you can keep going if you want. Otherwise, yeah, we can kind of tap into the Wells Fargo piece, but either way, I'll circle back to the CIO position, because I'll definitely want to ask more about that.
Well, yeah, so I'd say the second chapter, and this will be more brief, was I was diagnosed with cancer and given a pretty tough cancer diagnosis. And that was sort of a catalyst to get me off this track of being really laser focused on my career, which is good for your career, but maybe not good about some other things in your life, like relationships, for example. And it was kind of a wake up call, a disruptor, whatever you want to call it. And it was not certain that I was going to make it through alive, the cancer journey, given my diagnosis. And so what I really did is I started praying, which is a good thing to do for any situation you're in. I did a lot of prayer journaling, searching for God's will for what was next for my life, however long that ended up being. And I just felt like I was led to jump off this career track and do something different with my life, which is really basically that third chapter where I'm at now, which is really doing a lot of volunteering, giving back, spending time with family. I have two grandsons who I love like crazy that I spend a lot of time with, focusing on not only my health, but kind of our broader family's health. And still staying intellectually engaged by doing some mentoring, by serving on a couple of boards that are in the industry, and so on. So that's maybe just a nutshell of kind of that first question.
That's incredible. And I love those last two chapters, especially that you just added there, because I think that shows that life is more than just work. And it's about serving and helping others as well. That's right. That's great. So you mentioned you were the chief investment officer at Wells Fargo, and I believe it was for 11 years, if I'm not mistaken. Oops, just lost my question. Sorry, I'll repeat this question here. So you mentioned that you were the chief investment officer at Wells Fargo for about 11 years. What were some of the greatest learning lessons you received from this experiment? And why do you think you were able to achieve such a prestigious level of success in the corporate world? And kind of going off of that as well, just because you mentioned it, what role did your faith play into all of this?
Yeah, so first of all, there was a lot of lessons learned First of all, I never thought that I would be in a role like that. I didn't have a 5-year plan or a 10-year plan or a 20-year plan to get into it. Again, I just followed some of the principles that I really believe are important. Is to, first of all, be valuable in whatever I'm doing. Even if I'm doing a very routine job, is be valuable, do a really great job on that. Secondly, be easy to work with. Also, kind of synonymous with having a low ego, is that because a lot of days you don't feel like being easy to work with. A lot of days now during COVID, I'm sure a lot of people are just not feeling like they want to be easy to work with. But you distinguish yourself if you are easy to work with and somebody that, you know, people want to work with. And so that was one of my philosophies. That thirdly, embrace change quickly. So I know that for a lot of people, that's not a challenge, but some people get sort of stuck in the status quo for a long, long time and resist change. And I was, you know, somehow able to be a quick change person and adapt to change quickly, and not only adapt to it and adopt it, but also become an early adopter leader in helping that change move through. And those kinds of things get noticed in probably any kind of a role you play in life. The other thing is that I felt like I was a good communicator, and not so much the upfront communicator doing the speeches that always made me nervous. And I actually did a lot of coaching around that to try to get better at it over the years. But I was pretty good, I think, at communicating the same consistent message redundantly. And, you know, there's a saying that if you say, communicate one thing to people 5 times, you know, then maybe most of the people will say they heard it at least once. And I actually found that to be quite true. Maybe it's like 6 or 7 times for people to say they've heard it at least once. But I was pretty good, I think, at communicating redundantly, which is not always a given now. A lot of people will say something one time and they'll go like, well, I mentioned that like 2 months ago. I'm like, well, a lot has happened in the last 2 months. So I'm sorry, but I forgot about that. And you've got to keep, as a leader, you have to keep communicating consistently the same messages over and over. The last thing I'll just say is that I learned to tell stories, and this helped. My cancer journey actually helped on this. And I didn't immediately jump off the career track. I made it through my cancer journey. I went back to work full time. I got back on the road full time. But I just didn't have the fire in the belly to do it. And I felt like I was being led in a different direction. But because of that, I started actually speaking more from the heart and less from my brain. And it's like, people remember stories. I became a little bit better storyteller. People remember stories, but they don't remember any data that you give them, right? But they'll remember stories for a long time. So I became a better storyteller, which I think is important in, if you're in a leadership role, to be able to tell some stories to get your points across. Actually, there is one more last thing I'll say, is that my first lesson learned on the chief investment officer job was actually before I started the job. It was actually right after I was announced in this new role. I had a work colleague who was a good friend of mine that asked me in kind of a snarky way if I had a passport. And I was like, where's he going with this question? And he said, Dean, you've been traveling all over the United States, and that's great, but you need to expand your world view for our benefit in this new role. And you need to get outside the United States more. You need to do some research trips. You need to understand how investors in different countries think, how they operate, and so on. And that, I didn't really want to hear that, because I did not want to be living more on airplanes than I had already been doing. But I heard it. I heard it in the truth and love that it was meant to be. And I think the point of that is that whatever you're doing in life, you need to have people that feel comfortable speaking truth and love to you, because all of us have blind spots that if somebody doesn't call them out, those can be a career derailer. at many points along your career track. And so I've been fortunate enough to have people that are not uncomfortable telling me things that I don't want to hear, but I need to hear.
That's great. So you came into our investments class, Amanda Carter's investments class last fall, and I got to hear you speak in person, which was awesome. But in the class, you mentioned building a personal brand. And for people listening today, I'm just curious for them, what do you mean by this? And what is the importance of building that personal brand?
Well, personal brand, you could say it's similar to reputation. I use the word brand because it's maybe how you think you're perceived and maybe how others see you is another way to look at it. But I think this was intriguing when I started teaching after I retired from my full-time job, and I taught for a few semesters at Bethel. And every semester, about 3-4 weeks into the semester, I would sort of announce that I know everybody's brand in this classroom. And, you know, and then there's stunned silence, right? Because you're thinking, my gosh, well, I wonder what he thinks my brand is, you know? And so I always get 4, 5, 6 students approach me after class, after when I announce that, and say, could you tell me what you think my brand is? And I'll say, yeah, you're the 5 minutes late to class every session person, or you're the person that always sits in the front and is always engaged, kind of a more positive spin on that. But I think it's important to think about, because everybody does have a brand or a reputation, if you want to call it that. And I think it's important to know what your brand is. And if you don't, to ask some people that will tell you truth and love. And it might be very, very positive that, you know, you have a terrific brand already. Or it might be more constructive that, hey, there's some gaps in there that you need to work on. Part of, just as a helpful example, part of my brand, because then I ask people this, and I got a lot of 360 degree feedback, you know, throughout my career, which was very, very helpful, by the way, which is how I take it. But I had a reputation, a brand, if you will, for getting things done. I also had a reputation for learning how to navigate the organizational structure to, you know, get things done. Also is that if I said I was going to do something, I did it. That was part of my brand. I also had the brand of being approachable, not being like scary to come and ask me a question or scary to challenge me on something, and being kind of, as I mentioned earlier, relatively low ego in a position that can be kind of a high ego position for some people. And then authentic was another thing that people said, is that you just feel like you're authentic and you're believable. And that did definitely help me through like the financial crisis in 08, 09, being very believable and going, I don't know what exactly is going to happen. But here's what, you know, we can be focused on. And I think that people are like, well, I know exactly what's going to happen. It's like, that's not very believable if you're experienced in the investment world, because it's hard to know what's going to happen day to day, month to month, week to week, even with having a lot of information at your fingertips. And so those are just some things that I would share.
Wonderful. And, you know, I've heard quite a bit about your personal brand in the best way possible from both Amanda Carter and Lucas Bunting. and they keep mentioning a wisdom tooth story. And I'm kind of curious, what is that story about your wisdom tooth that they keep mentioning?
Well, Tony, this just goes to show the value of storytelling, right? Because I don't think people remembered anything else that
sorry,
I said,
one
but
sec.
They remembered something about wisdom.
Could you backtrack 1 second? It just kind of cut out right there.
Okay.
Tony,
Tony, this actually, the very question illustrates why storytelling is important, because I don't think anybody remembered anything other than the wisdom teeth story. And this is really about work ethic, to illustrate work ethic. So I had just started a new job, and I had found out that I had wisdom teeth that were impacted and needed to be taken out. So I went to a dentist in the Skyway who convinced me to not get put under, but to just to get isolated Novocaine and let him work, you know, work his magic and get the four wisdom teeth out. Anyway, make a long story short, I got them out. I wouldn't advise doing it that way. If I had to over again, I would just get put under and be done with it. But I went right back from the dentist office to my office, which was just like a block away in the Skyway. And I got on the elevator, and there was two people in my new group that were on the elevator. And they said, "Dean, there's like blood on the corners of your mouth." And I said, "Oh," I said, I had my wisdom teeth taken out. And they go, "Like yesterday?" I said, "No, 5 minutes ago." Mm-hmm. And I was heading back into the office. And apparently this got spread around the office that I was so dedicated or such a crazy work ethic that, you know, I got my wisdom teeth taken out. And 5 minutes later, I'm back in the office. So anyway, that was the point of the story. And again, not that I would recommend anybody do that, but it was sort of like my brand was very, very well established early on in that company as somebody that was highly dedicated and had a strong work ethic as a result of that.
That would definitely cement a brand. That is, that's great. Oh my goodness. So as far as investing goes, obviously you've had plenty of experience. What advice would you give students, you know, from freshman to senior year who are looking to build an investment portfolio? Is there a type of approach you would recommend for them?
Well, first of all, it's a lot easier to do that now than it was even 10 years ago, because basically transactions costs are essentially close to zero. And there's a lot more ways to access the market. That's easy. But I would say I'd have three basic principles to build an investment portfolio. First of all, keep it simple. So don't overcomplicate it early on. And that might be interesting to do, but try to stay away from that. Don't get too many different investment vehicles or investment products in the portfolio. Don't try to over-diversify by having too many names in the portfolio. Obviously you want to be diversified enough, but you can do that by basically buying a broad index of a market segment, if you will, through one investment product, as you well know. So I would keep it simple, whatever simple means to you. And then secondly, I would always add and not subtract from the portfolio. What I mean by that is once you start taking money out of your portfolio, it becomes harder to put money back in. So if you're going to start a portfolio, decide that this is going to be for the very long term. And I am not going to take money out of it if I want to buy extravagant Christmas presents for people or, you know, buy a new vehicle or a better vehicle or what have you. But always, if you have the approach that I'm always going to add to it, and not subtract, because this is not your emergency savings fund or anything like that, I think you'll be well served. Third, I would say is be very disciplined. You don't need to trade on what people are telling you about the market today or next week or the following month. You want to take a long-term approach. You want to be disciplined. If everybody says, "Oh my goodness, the economy is horrible, and the market is going to be horrible. And COVID's been a great example of that. The market has not been horrible other than the first month or so of COVID. But most people, myself included, would not have expected it to be that way. But that's the way it has. And so stay disciplined long term. Don't let your emotions drive your behavior. And kind of stick with your plan.
That's great. And so kind of with the idea of the market being so volatile, would you recommend you know, riding it out, or what's kind of your take there? I've heard a few different things. Obviously most of the professors here would say, you know, ride it out. You're young, you can make it. Do your suggestions differ at all from that?
No, not really. And I would say this is that, you have to figure out ways to trick your emotional being into taking the right behavior. So for example, if you were to say, I have $4,000 that I could put into an investment portfolio right now, I'd say put 2,000 in now. Okay. And then over the next 4 months, put $500 a month in and sort of average in a little bit and catch some downturns in the market. And sometimes you're not going to catch downturns. You're going to look back and say, well, maybe I would have been better putting all 4,000, but I found it better if you can average into the market. And if you have the income or the resources where you can put just a little bit of money in every month, that allows you to switch emotionally when the market doesn't look so good, to go, oh, the market doesn't look so good, but I can buy things on sale now that 2 months ago I would have said that was a terrific company and a terrific opportunity, and the stock price was higher, but I didn't want it, but I don't want to do it now because the stock price is lower and nothing much has changed other than the stock price is lower because people are more fearful, right? And so hopefully what I'm saying makes sense, but I've always found that if I keep some dry powder that I can invest on a regular basis into the market, that then if I hit a downturn in the market, I feel like, well, that's great. I get to buy these quality companies for a cheaper price than I would have been able to a few months ago.
I think that's a great way of stating it. And I think that a lot of students will appreciate that advice quite a few years down the road for sure. So right. Thank you for that. My last question for you is, if you could go back to your college years at River Falls, what advice would you give yourself?
Yeah, one thing I would do differently is that I would learn a language. Some people say I barely know English, and that's my first language. But I would, and I don't feel like I'm particularly gifted in languages, but I feel like I would want to learn, take the time to learn a language and do a semester abroad in that language, in that culture. And this is some of the things that I've learned later in my career when, you know, I started traveling more extensively around the world and learning about different cultures and so on, is that I feel like that would have benefited me more kind of from my broader global view early on in my career. I'm not sure if I would have passed those courses, but.
No, I think that's so valuable. And, you know, speaking from my perspective of being able to study abroad, I completely agree with you. That's one of by far the best memories I've had in college. And I would totally second that.
Cool.
So, well, Dean, thank you so much for all of that insight. I really appreciate it. And I know our listeners will too. I think that you've shared so much valuable information, and I really value your time. So thank you for taking that time out of your day to be here with us.
You're welcome. Thanks, Tony.
Wonderful.